Yep. Okay, so let's say the cause was an employer, all right? All right, but let's go further. So you believe that everything that you touch gets screwed up, okay? And then, and somebody told you that, probably an employer. Does that affect your self-esteem? Does it? A lot? Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Destroys your self-esteem. Does it affect your security? How? So if you have a job, you feel like you might get fired because you're just going to screw it up anyway. So that's going to affect your security. Is it going to affect your security in a relationship? Because you're afraid you'll drive them off, right? And, okay, does it, it affect your financial security if it affects your job security, right? So there are a variety of ways that it affects your security. Does it affect your ambitions? Why? Right. If you're going to screw it up, you might as well not even begin. To overcompensate. All right. Does it affect your personal relations? So you don't, you'd probably be afraid to form personal relations for fear that they're going to not like you anyway. Right? Does it affect your sex relations? It can, because you're afraid to drive him off too, right? Is it a lie? What do you mean? Why? Right. It was, wasn't it? So, is it a lie? So, why do you believe it? Okay, if it's a lie, and it is, let's take a look at that. Now, let's go into the fourth column. Why is that selfish to believe that? Well, it's selfish to believe that because just a second. You know it's a lie, but you won't change your mind. So instead of going through all the work of challenging that belief, you just continue to believe it. And you go, I'm not changing my mind. I'll just believe it. I'm comfortable. We have a tendency to be comfortable with our discomfort. All right? Yes, precisely. So we don't want to change our mind about anything. And it's selfish to take that position, even though it's a lie. Why is it dishonest to believe it? Because it's a lie. Exactly. It's dishonest to believe a lie. Why is it self-seeking to believe that? That's a little tougher. Here's why. It's self-seeking to believe that because it allows you to be a victim. All right? So you can say, well, if I'm going to screw up everything I touch, that's an explanation for everything bad that's ever happened to me. Yep. Yep, sure is. So you can just say, well, that's the way it is, and I'm victimized by because I'm one of those people, you know, that, and so I'm never really not going to amount to anything, and that's the reason, and I understand that. That's self-seeking, to take that kind of position about allowing yourself to be a victim based on a lie. The truth is that you don't touch up every, or you don't screw up everything you touch. You screw up very few things that you touch, and everyone screws up some of the things they touch. And the idea that you somehow are substandard goods because every once in a while you have a failure in your life just puts you on an even plane with everyone else. Okay? Why is it frightening to believe that? Mm-hmm. That's part of it. Yeah. And it's frightening because you believe some of it's true. Some, you know, it's frightening to think that it might be true. Right? You want to do another one? What else? I'm worthless. Who said that? Okay. Why? What's the cause? Where'd you get that idea? What did they say to you? That you were worthless. What does that mean, by the way? Does it mean you'll never amount to anything? You have nothing to offer. Okay. Does that affect your self-esteem? Oh, man, right? Does it affect your security? How?
Because I haven't felt like being good enough. I'm always trying to do better than the next guy.
So you think you have to work harder to get to the same place? Does it affect your ambitions? So you won't try, or what? Or you'll try too hard, or?
I'll try to a certain point, but then, you know, it always seems to backfire. It's like when I start getting close enough to that point where I think I'm there, the curve kicks in, but I'm not worth it, so why should I make the final push?
So you sabotage your own efforts to prove that you aren't worthwhile. Does it affect your personal relations? Why? Right. Does it affect your sex relations? It would, for the same reason, right? Is it a lie?
Yeah.
Are you worthwhile?
Yeah.
What puts you on that basis? Yeah.
I've learned that since I came in that I have something to offer.
What puts you on that basis? Okay. Yeah. There's only one benchmark in life. Although people make all kinds of benchmarks about their relative value, the truth is that we are all children of God. And as such, we are all equals in God's eyes. And that's the only benchmark. And as long as I'm a child of God, I'm as good as anyone else. Okay? And I am worthwhile, and I have value. And I have potential that is way beyond my own imagination. Why is it selfish to believe that? To believe that you're worthwhile, or that you're worthless? Yeah. Same reason, really. It's a lie, and you continue to believe it because you're comfortable with the lie. Okay? So you don't attack it. You don't consider it. You don't seek the truth. You just continue to believe it. Is it dishonest to believe that? Is it a lie?
To believe that I'm worthless?
Yeah. It's a lie, isn't it? I mean, it's clear. And don't feel bad about this. We all believe lies. And for various reasons. And we all come in here, when I keep saying that, we come in here with a head full of nonsense. That's the kind of nonsense that we're coming in here with. And it's like dragging an anchor through life. It truly is. It's like pulling weights. And so every place we go, our decisions are based on the idea that we're worthless, and it will sabotage everything we do. It will keep us at a level in life that is lower than we could have accomplished. It truly will keep us chained to our own fear and won't allow us to succeed at what we could have easily succeeded at because we didn't believe we could. Okay? If you really want to have fun in life, go out and challenge this stuff. Go out and see what you are capable of. Go out and find out how smart you really are. And what you're going to find out was that you had no comprehension at all as to the degree to which you could succeed. And you'll never find that out unless you go challenge it. Because it is. See, we spend a portion of our adult life believing we can't do a lot. And I don't care if we really succeed. I mean, I was a vice president of a Fortune 500 company thinking I didn't belong there. And the things that took me there were the skills that I exhibited that they made those decisions on. And I was always doing this sort of self-denigrating humor, and it'd piss them off. And they'd go, "Bob, you're one of the brightest people in this corporation." And I was the youngest VP by 20 years. And they're going, "What do you mean? You just, we're looking at you for all kinds of things." And I'm sitting there thinking I had no way or shape deserved to be where I was because I wasn't good enough, I wasn't smart enough, I wasn't slick enough. I just didn't belong there. I was a mongrel. I didn't have the right kind of education. I didn't have any of that. And it was all an illusion. It was all just BS that was stuck in my head by people who were angry at me at the time and told me that I would never amount to anything, that I had no value, that I would never succeed, and that I would probably wind up in an insane asylum or a prison or a grave. And those were my choices. And you know what it was? It was just all somebody's angry idea at getting back at me and telling me things that suited their purpose at the time. And I carried that stuff like it was gospel for the rest of my life until I found out the truth. Yeah. And are you dishonest in believing that? Yeah, it's dishonest to believe a lie, isn't it? And you're self-seeking because if you continue to believe it, it becomes an excuse to fail. Then if you need justification for something not working out in your life, you can go, "Well, you know, I'm worthless. So I'm not at all surprised this didn't work." Or if you get scared and run off, okay? In the middle of trying to do something, if you get scared and run off, you'd say, I could have never done this anyway. And you can use that as an excuse. You can be a victim of that belief. It's just, this stuff is really nasty. And it's frightening because if you spend most of your life thinking you're worthless, it's really frightening to think that might be the truth. And it's a lie. It was a lie, it is a lie, it'll always be a lie, and if you continue to believe it, you're just propping up a lie. Okay? To some real degree, it'll become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah.
I had a very similar situation when I was on the street. I remember the time that I really thought that it was like, I brought it on one more time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, right off. And so, maybe someone that I was going to announce it. And so, because of that, and I had this photo, I was like you thought I was looking at the camera shots from the South. They were promoted management positions. And I was just totally inadequate to be able to do this. And my work was business, my ability doesn't run. This is that I was strong, I worked hard for a week, 3 years, you know. And so I would get promoted, get to the close to the, really being successful financially, and I would settle.
Why?
Why?
I do.
I think to me it's more of the, because I have this, I know I have a fear of success and I have a fear of failure. They don't have to.
Well,
I can't succeed and I can't fail.
When your life becomes an outrageous paradox, then you start taking things apart. Because it doesn't make any sense.
They just don't get it. There's something wrong with them. They're telling me I'm broke. And they want to give me stores to run and things like this.
Right.
Multi-million-dollar businesses. I'm like, you can ask me six of them. Do you see how stupid?
Well, very few people come in to Alcoholics Anonymous with any sense of self-worth. Well, any sense of self-esteem.
But right up until this happened, I'd be tough. I'd be working out with everybody.
That's your fear. Well, it's really nice when you change your motivation. If you go from this business about I got to work twice as hard as anybody else to succeed, to thinking that I'm just going to outwork people because I'm capable of it and I enjoy it. No, the reason why the business that I have in Colorado is probably two or three times larger than anyone else in that business is because I really like to do this. And I like to go out there. I mean, I'm 68 years old. I'm still working like 60 hours a week. And I love what I'm doing. I like to see the difference I make. I like to see the results in both success in the business and the financial success that comes with it. I like to do that. I mean, it flies in the face of everything I believed about myself for so long. And it's fun to not be who you thought you were. And the only way you're really going to find the truth about these kinds of things is by challenging what you believe. And then you, at some point, there's a couple things that happen when you write inventory like this. One of them is that when you get done with it, you're faced with this realization that I can't believe what I believe. I can't believe I believe that. I mean, how the hell could I believe that? To me now, it's so clear that I must be deluded to think that that was true. As soon as you put that stuff out in the light of day, you just start shaking your head about why you believe it. Okay? The other question that comes up afterwards is, if I'm not this, what am I? If I'm not what I thought I was, what am I? And the answer is, I'm a child of God. And what happens when you have years of low self-esteem is that it effectively prevents you from ever trying anything, ever believing that you have real value in this world. It keeps you from trying new things. It keeps you from considering all sorts of things that you... it just prevents you from engaging in life, okay? And wouldn't you like to have the freedom to go out there and see all these things, do all these things that other people do? The only thing that's holding you back is your fear. And 99.9% of your fears have no substance at all. They are ethereal. They just don't have any. No substance. And the only way you're going to find that out is to walk through it. Now, I can tell you that one of the real indications of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous is a willingness to risk. So there you're sitting there and going, well, I'd really like to take a shot at that, but man, that's a big if. I mean, what if I don't look good? What if I fail? What's failure? Failure is not trying. Failure isn't trying something and not getting it done. Failure is not trying at all. Failure is allowing your fear to prevent you from getting one foot in front of the other. That's what failure is. You know, you can go out, and I've had as many businesses that failed as businesses that succeeded, but if one failed, you just go start another one, and you don't create any harm in the process. So we have this head full of nonsense about what we can do, and at some point we have to find the courage to challenge it. Now, how do you do that? How much, here in the fear inventory, the book says men of faith have courage, okay? That's a line in the book. Men of faith have courage. And I always thought, well, if you got faith, what do you need courage for? I mean, if I have all this faith, I'll just go do it anyway. But one of the problems is that I don't have perfect faith. So that means I always have doubt about everything. But I also have courage, it says. And the next question is, how much? And see, if I get courage, what I want is enough courage to leap tall buildings. Right? I want so much courage that I can just go out there and be absolutely fearless in the face of anything. You know how much courage I get? Enough, just enough. Enough to get one foot in front of the other. Okay? And that's all you need. So I need courage to risk. And I need to risk to find out that I not only am not the person I thought I was, but that God is working in my behalf. And see, you will never, ever, ever find out who and what you are until you start testing the limits. You don't want to be my age and never have tried anything because you're so locked down by your own fear. You're going to really be mad at yourself. Okay? So one of the things that God gives us is enough courage to go out and find out who we really are and what we really have the capacity to do. One of the things, I don't know if you guys, one of the One of Bill Wilson's favorite people was an old English tent preacher named Emmett Fox. And he used to go to Carnegie Hall because Emmett Fox became quite a prominent preacher in his day. And in the 30s, Bill and Lois Wilson would go down, they live in New York, and they would go over to Carnegie Hall and listen to Emmett Fox preach. And if, just as an aside, because this isn't in the big book, Emmett Fox talks about a lot of different things, but one of the things that he talks about is heart's desire. And your heart's desire is who and what you really want to be or do. Okay? And it's all this nonsense that we're carrying around that prevents us from doing that. And so if you have a heart's desire, and everyone really does at some level, why are you not pursuing it? Maybe that's what God had always intended you to do. And maybe it's your intuition that is telling you to do or become that. And are you going to allow your fear from ever preventing yourself from fulfilling your real true desire in life? There's a little story in the book about a farmer who comes up out of a storm cellar. Do you know what storm cellars look like? They had outside doors to them in those farms that I grew up in. And I don't know why either, but you'd go out of the front door, and then there's these big doors you opened up, and you went down, and usually that's where you put your canning and stuff. So you'd go down into the storm cellar that was basically a basement under the house. If you were in an area where tornadoes were prominent. And in this story in the big book, this guy comes out of the storm cellar and his house is wrecked. And he says, "Don't see nothing wrong here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" Okay? And what's the point of that? Anybody know the point of that? Right. Yeah, you know, so the general statement that it refers to is not drinking is not enough. All right? You know, when I stopped drinking, I went around to people that I had done some serious harm to and went, "Everything's cool, I stopped drinking." Yeah, and people were looking at me like, "Well, you know where you can put that?" And the truth was that I had created a great deal of damage and I was very sick. And just walking around mumbling some sort of apology when we stop drinking doesn't fit the bill, okay? There is a real recovery from alcoholism, and it requires a lot of introspection. It requires us to take a serious look at ourselves on a regular basis. And if we're willing to do that over time, we will recover. Spiritually, emotionally, and physically. And it's just amazing. One of the lines in the book is that when we recover spiritually, that we will also, huh? Yeah. Yeah. And that one looked a little suspect the first time I read it, but it's true. It's true to the point where I wouldn't be sitting in front of you today if it wasn't true. So once we deal with the spiritual problem, those other things seem to resolve themselves, and that's very true. You know, I haven't found anything in the big book that isn't true. And I have challenged almost everything in the last 30-some years that I thought I could challenge. and I have never found anything in there that's a lie. Okay, so do you know how to write principal inventory? We just talked about it. You know how to do that? I have never met anyone who couldn't, almost at the drop of a hat initially, sit down and write 10 or 12 things that they believed about themselves that were self-defeating. So, all right. Now, how long should you take writing your inventory? I had mentioned this to someone the other day. Here's the problem with writing inventory. How many people have you heard say, I drank when I wrote inventory? You want to know the truth? They drank when they didn't write inventory. They get stuck in the middle of it or do something. What happens when you write inventory is this. All of a sudden, you find out that that you did a bunch of things that weren't very nice, that you affected a bunch of other people adversely and affected yourself adversely, and that you're not a very nice person, basically. That you really created some harm in that. You've done a whole bunch of things you couldn't particularly be proud of, okay? If you just write inventory and you sit in it, that's all you're going to understand. So all you did was present yourself with the problem, all right? You get to see the problem, and then you're sitting there with it. The thing you hear around my home group is, if you're traveling through hell, don't stop. All right? If you only get to inventory and you don't get any further, all you've been presented with is the problem. And that is a very difficult place emotionally. You won't drink if your intent is to go through this process. You just won't drink an inventory. That's one of the truths. If you stop in the middle, you will. If you have no intent of going any further, you will. Because all it does is make you unsettled. You got presented with all this truth about yourself and you got no place to go with it. All right? So don't stop in inventory. Don't get in the middle of it and put it away and decide you're going to come back to it next month, because it's just going to make your life miserable. If you spend more than 6 weeks in an inventory, you're practicing self-abuse. All right? I don't care how long you've written inventory. And I know, and I've done all this silly stuff too. But the truth is that you're really abusing yourself if you hang around in inventory that long. And if you're sponsoring someone that's writing inventory, stay on them. Just say, I want you to write at least an hour every day. And if it's just an hour, it's fine. But you can do that at any point in the day you want to do it, but do it when you get up, do it before you go to bed, do it when you go on your lunch break, do it whenever you want to do it. But I want an hour of inventory every day, and if you do that, it will rarely take you over 30 days to write your whole inventory. All right. Now, how do you write fear inventory? Yeah.
Putting yourself on that. talk about it.